A Werewolf Romance, written by Georgina Anderson. Prologue. I'm standing in the ruins of a burning library, smoke thick in my lungs, and the only thing I can think about is the man who bought me like cattle 3 months ago. The man whose silence has become the only language I understand. The man who is dying in my arms right now, his silver eyes finally, finally meeting mine as his lips form words he hasn't spoken in 7 years. My name? Just my name. And I realize, with the kind of clarity that only comes when everything is falling apart, that I would burn down 1,000 libraries, betray 1,000 oaths, shatter every star in the sky to hear him say it again. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me tell you how a slave girl from a nothing pack became the only person who could save the most feared alpha in the realm. Let me tell you about the curse, the conspiracy, and the song that was always meant to be ours. Let me tell you how I fell in love with silence. The chains around my wrists are silver, not iron, like the ones they use for common prisoners. Silver, because I'm dangerous. Because 3 years ago, when I was 16 and stupid, and so desperately lonely, I screamed at an elder who was beating my friend, and my voice, my cursed, wretched voice, stopped his heart. Just stopped it. Like snuffing out a candle. They called me a murderer, a dark witch, an abomination. My own pack, the Thornvale Pack, barely more than a collection of farmers and shepherds in the shadow of greater powers, couldn't kill me outright, some ancient law about pack bonds, but they could make me wish they had. 3 years of sleeping in the cold room beneath the kitchens, 3 years of eating scraps, 3 years of everyone I'd ever known looking at me with fear and disgust. And then came the debt. My alpha, a weak man named Gareth who'd inherited his position through blood rather than merit, had apparently gambled away our pack's winter stores in some political game with the Nightfang Pack. The details didn't matter to me then. What mattered was that when the Nightfang's emissary came to collect, they didn't want grain or gold. They wanted me. A life debt, Gareth had said, not quite meeting my eyes. His relief was palpable. You'll serve Alpha Tyrion for 1 year. It's an honor, really. An honor. Right. Everyone knew about Alpha Tyrion of the Nightfang Pack. Everyone whispered his name like a curse. The Silent Alpha. The one who hadn't spoken since the night his parents died in a mysterious fire 7 years ago. The one who held the Starfall Peaks, that impossibly beautiful, impossibly strategic mountain range, with an iron fist and military genius that bordered on precognition. The one who was rumored to be completely, utterly, ruthlessly unfeeling. They said he'd killed challengers with his bare hands, that he'd crushed a rebellion by burning an entire village, that his silence wasn't grief, but the cold calculation of a predator who didn't waste breath on prey, and now I belonged to him. The journey to the Starfall Peaks takes 4 days. I'm transported in a covered wagon with 2 guards who don't speak to me, which is fine. I'm used to silence. I spend the time watching the landscape change through the wagon's small window, flat farmland giving way to rolling hills, then to the sharp, crystalline peaks that glow faintly even in daylight, like they're holding fragments of fallen stars in their stone. It's beautiful. Heartbreakingly beautiful. I hate that I notice. The Nightfang Fortress is carved into the largest peak, a sprawling complex of dark stone and soaring towers that seems to grow from the mountain itself. As we pass through the outer gates, I see warriors training in the courtyard, men and women moving with lethal grace, their practice weapons whistling through the air. They stop to watch our wagon pass, and I see the same expression on every face. Pity. My stomach drops. We stop at the inner keep, and a man in captain's armor opens the wagon door. He's older than me by maybe a decade, with kind eyes that don't match the hardness of his jaw. I'm Captain Rylan, he says quietly. I'll escort you to the Alpha. Is he really? I start, then stop. What am I even asking? Is he really a monster? Is he really going to make my life hell? Is he really silent? Or is that just another story? Rylan's expression softens slightly. He's complicated. Follow me. The halls of the fortress are lit by crystals that pulse with soft, steady light. Magic, I realize. Old magic. The walls are covered with tapestries, depicting battles, ceremonies, great wolves under moonlight. Everything speaks of history, power, legacy. I feel very small. Rylan leads me to a set of massive double doors carved with intricate patterns of stars and wolves. He knocks once, then pushes them open. The war room is exactly what I'd expect, a huge circular chamber dominated by a table covered with maps, figurines representing packs and territories. Weapons line the walls. Windows overlook the mountain range, and standing at the table, his back to us, is Alpha Tyrion. He's tall. That's my first thought. Broad-shouldered, dressed in dark leather and steel, his black hair tied back from a face I can't yet see. His hands are spread on the table, fingers pressed against the map like he's trying to hold the world in place through sheer will. Alpha, Rylan says. The Thornvale debt has arrived. Tyrion goes very still. Then he turns and I forget how to breathe. He's young, maybe 25, with features that would be beautiful if they weren't so cold. Sharp cheekbones, a strong jaw, lips pressed into a hard line. But it's his eyes that trap me. Silver. Not gray, not blue, but actual metallic silver. Like moonlight given form. And when they lock onto mine, I feel it like a physical impact. He stares at me for what feels like an eternity. His expression doesn't change. No surprise, no interest, no disdain. Nothing. But his hands, I notice, have curled into fists on the table. Alpha? Rylan prompts gently. Tyrion's jaw tightens. He looks away from me, actually has to look away, and reaches for a piece of parchment on the table. He writes something quickly, his movements sharp, almost angry. He hands the note to Rylan. Rylan reads it, and his expression falls. Are you certain? Tyrion's glare could cut steel. As you command. Rylan turns to me, and I see apology in his eyes. You'll be quartered in the servants' wing. Your duties will be varied. You're dismissed. That's it. No welcome, no explanation, no acknowledgement that I'm a living person, and not just a piece on his war table. Tyrion has already turned back to his maps, his shoulders rigid, dismissing me as thoroughly as if I'd never existed. I should feel relieved. I'd been terrified he'd be cruel, that he'd hurt me, that he'd use me in the ways men with power often use women without it. Instead, I feel insulted, angry, which is stupid because what did I expect? As Rylan leads me away, I glance back once. Tyrion hasn't moved, but his head is bowed, one hand pressed to his temple like he's fighting off a headache. Or something worse. The first month is exactly as miserable as I'd anticipated, just not in the ways I'd feared. I'm given a small room in the servants' quarters, sparse but clean, with an actual bed and a window overlooking the mountains. The other servants are polite but distant. They don't know what to make of me. I'm not quite a prisoner, not quite a slave, not quite a servant. I'm the debt, a category unto myself. My duties are bizarre and seemingly random. One day, I'm scrubbing floors in the public halls. The next, I'm organizing weapons in the armory. Then I'm tasked with cleaning Tyrion's war room, always when he's not there, carefully dusting around the maps and figurines that represent the fragile peace of the Silent War. I learn things during these duties. I listen to the servants' gossip, to the warriors' train, to the advisors argue in hallways they think are empty. I learn that the Nightfang Pack is powerful, but isolated. That the other major packs, particularly the Suncrest Pack, see Tyrion's silence as weakness despite his military victories. That there's a governing body called the Moon Council, made up of alphas and a high priestess named Morvana, who maintains the magical treaty that prevents all-out war. I learn that Tyrion's parents died in a fire when he was 18, the same night he stopped speaking. That he has no siblings, no mate, no heir. That his pack follows him out of respect for his tactical brilliance and fear of his ruthlessness, but no one really knows him. And I learn that he avoids me. It's deliberate, obvious. If I'm cleaning a room and he enters, he leaves. If we pass in a hallway, he turns down a different corridor. The few times duty forces us into the same space, he won't look at me, won't acknowledge me. His silver eyes slide past me like I'm not even there. It shouldn't hurt. He's not my friend, not my alpha, not anything to me. But it does hurt. Because sometimes, when he doesn't know I'm watching, I catch him staring at nothing with an expression of such profound pain that it makes my chest ache. Sometimes I hear him pacing in his chambers at night, restless, like he's being hunted by dreams he can't escape. Sometimes I see him flinch when someone speaks too loudly, see him press his palms to his temples like the world is too much, too sharp, too loud. He's not cold, I realize. He's suffering. And no one else seems to notice. It's during my second month, while I'm cleaning his war room for the 100th time, that I find the locket. It's wedged between two floorboards near the window, partially hidden by a tapestry. A small silver thing tarnished with age, with a clasp that opens easily under my fingers. Inside are two miniature portraits, a man and a woman, both beautiful, both with Tyrion's sharp features. His parents, obviously. But there's something else. A tiny inscription on the inside of the locket. The song will remember. I stare at those words for a long time, a strange sensation crawling up my spine. A memory, distant and hazy, surfaces in my mind. I'm 7 years old, sitting in the lap of Elder Lyra, the only person in my pack who was ever kind to me. She's humming a melody, old and haunting, while she braids my hair. "What song is that?" I ask. "An old one, little star," she says softly. "From when your grandmother's grandmother was young. They called it the Song of Binding, sung by the Starlight Singers." "What's a Starlight Singer?" She pauses, her weathered fingers gentle in my hair. "Women who could weave magic with their voices. Healers, peacemakers, blessed by the moon herself. They say the last of them died out generations ago." "Why?" "Because people fear what they don't understand. Because power that can heal can also harm. And people always fear the harm more than they treasure the healing." She cups my face, her eyes sad and knowing. "Your voice is not a curse, child, but a song the world has forgotten. Do not let them make you silent." But they did. They did make me silent after I killed that elder. After my voice became a weapon instead of a gift. I close the locket carefully and slip it into my pocket. I don't know why. It's stealing, technically, but something tells me Tyrion doesn't even remember it's here. Something tells me it's important. That night, I dream of music I've never heard, and a silver-eyed wolf who won't stop running. Everything changes the day the Suncrest Pack emissaries arrive. I'm in the kitchens helping prepare for some formal dinner I won't be attending when the entire fortress seems to hold its breath. Warriors move to alert positions. Servants rush around with barely controlled panic. Captain Rylan himself comes to find me, his expression grim. "Come with me," he says. "Why? What's happening?" "The Suncrest Pack is challenging the Alpha's stability. There are protocols. You need to be present." He won't explain further, just leads me to the great hall where Tyrion receives formal guests. I'm positioned off to the side, behind a pillar where I can see, but hopefully not be seen. The hall fills with Nightfang warriors and advisors, all tense, all watching the main doors. Then Tyrion enters. He's dressed for war, black armor etched with silver, a sword at his hip, his hair loose around his face. He looks every inch the fearsome alpha the stories describe. He takes his place at the head of the hall, standing rather than sitting on the ornate chair that serves as his throne, and his silver eyes are absolutely cold. The Suncrest emissaries enter with deliberate arrogance. Three of them, two warriors and a woman in diplomatic robes who speaks for their alpha. "Alpha Tyrion," she says, her voice carrying through the hall. The Suncrest Pack brings greetings from Alpha Marcus, and concerns. Tyrion's expression doesn't change. He simply watches her with those unnerving silver eyes. The woman shifts slightly, unnerved despite herself. Your continued silence has become a matter of political significance. The Moon Council questions whether an Alpha who cannot speak can truly lead. Whether the Nightfang Pack and the strategic Starfall Peaks wouldn't be better served under alternative leadership. A muscle ticks in Tyrion's jaw. That's the only sign he's heard her. Furthermore, the woman continues, emboldened by his silence, we've heard troubling reports. That you keep a slave from a lesser pack. That you've been seen behaving erratically. The dishonor of it reflects poorly on all packs. My stomach drops. They're talking about me. This is about me. Tyrion's hand moves to the sword at his hip, not drawing it, just resting his fingers on the pommel. A clear threat. Captain Ryland steps forward, his voice hard. You overstep, emissary. The Alpha's personal affairs are not your concern. They become our concern when they threaten pack stability, the woman snaps. When they suggest weakness. When they... She doesn't finish. Because Tyrion moves. One moment he's standing still. The next, he's crossed the space between them in three strides, and his hand is wrapped around the woman's throat. Not squeezing, not hurting, but the threat is unmistakable. His face is inches from hers, his eyes blazing with something that makes everyone in the hall take a collective step back. The room erupts. The Suncrest warriors reach for weapons. The Nightfang warriors move to intercept. Captain Rylan is shouting orders. And through it all, Tyrion is perfectly, terrifyingly silent. He releases the woman who stumbles back, gasping. He stares at her for one more moment, then turns and walks out of the hall without a single word, leaving chaos in his wake. I don't see him for 3 days after that. But on the fourth day, I receive a summons. A note slipped under my door in handwriting I'm starting to recognize. Come to the western wing. Third door on the left. Tonight. Tell no one. I should ignore it. I should burn the note and forget I ever saw it. Instead, I go. The western wing is older than the rest of the fortress, the stone darker, the magic in the walls humming with age. I find the third door easily. It's slightly ajar, warm light spilling through the gap. I push it open and step into paradise. It's a library. Not a small collection of books, but a massive, sprawling library that seems to extend impossibly far into the mountain itself. Shelves reach toward shadowed ceilings, filled with more books than I've ever seen in my life. Crystals cast gentle light over reading nooks, cushioned chairs, tables covered with open volumes. And standing in the center of it all, looking more uncertain than I've ever seen him, is Tyrion. He gestures to the space, then to me, a question in his eyes. Is this for me? I whisper. He nods once. I walk deeper into the room, running my fingers along the spines of books, and something in my chest cracks open. No one has ever given me anything like this. No one has ever seen that I might want something like this. Why? I ask, turning to face him. He's watching me with an intensity that makes my skin prickle. Slowly, he picks up a piece of parchment from the nearest table and writes something. He hands it to me. You need answers. So do I. This is where we'll find them. Answers about what? He hesitates, then writes again. His hand is shaking slightly, I notice. Everything. And that's how it begins. We fall into a routine. Every night, after my duties are done, I come to the library. Sometimes Tyrion is already there. Sometimes he arrives later. We don't speak. I mean, I could speak, but something about the silence feels sacred, like breaking it would shatter whatever fragile thing is forming between us. Instead, we communicate through notes. At first, they're simple. Functional. Me. What am I looking for? Tyrion. Books about the old packs. Before the Silent War. History of this region. Me. That's vague. Tyrion. Start with the section on ancient magic. Top shelf, eastern wall. But as the days pass, the notes become more personal. Me. Why did you stop speaking? Tyrion. I can't remember. Me. What do you mean you can't remember? Tyrion. Exactly that. The night my parents died, something happened. I woke up 3 days later and I was silent. Everything before that night is clear. Everything after is clear. But that night itself? Gone. Me. That's not normal. Tyrion. I know. Me. So what do you think happened? Tyrion. I think someone made me forget. That note changes everything. Because if someone made Tyrion forget, if someone stole his voice and his memories, then his silence isn't a choice or a trauma response. It's a curse. And curses can be broken. We start searching with new purpose. I work through the history books, learning about the old magic, the Starlight Singers, the ancient treaties. Tyrion brings me documents from the Pack Archives, records of the night his parents died, testimonies from witnesses, official reports. Nothing quite adds up. The fire that killed his parents was ruled an accident, but three different witnesses mention seeing a woman in white near the estate that night. A woman no one recognized. The magical investigation was conducted by High Priestess Morvana herself, and she declared the site clean of any dark magic. Wait, I say out loud one night, forgetting our unspoken rule of silence. Tyrion looks up sharply from his own reading. Morvana, she's on the Moon Council, right? She's been the High Priestess for how long? Tyrion writes quickly. 20 years. Why? Because she was also mentioned in this book about the Starlight Singers. I hold up the ancient tome I've been reading. She was a young priestess when the last known Starlight Singer died. There was an investigation because some believed the death wasn't natural. Tyrion goes very still. What was the conclusion? Inconclusive. The investigation was closed. I flip through the pages, my heart racing. But look at this. The Starlight Singer who died? Her name was Arya, and she had a daughter, so? So the daughter disappeared. No one knows what happened to her, but she would have been around my grandmother's age. I look up at him, pieces clicking together in my mind. Elder Lyra used to sing me songs. Old songs. Songs she said my grandmother taught her. Songs of the Starlight Singers. Tyrion's eyes widen. He writes furiously, "You're descended from them? Maybe. I don't know. But my voice. Tyrion, what if my voice isn't a curse? What if it's a gift I never learned to control?" He stares at me for a long moment, then writes one word. "Sing." "What?" "No. I can't. I killed someone." He underlines the word. "Sing. I'm afraid." He stands, crosses to where I'm sitting, and kneels in front of me. This close, I can see the flecks of blue in his silver eyes, the faint scar on his jaw. He takes my hand, the first time he's touched me, and his skin is warm, calloused, trembling slightly. He brings my hand to his chest, over his heart. I can feel it racing. "I'm afraid too," he mouths, not writing, just shaping the words with his lips. "But I think you're the only one who can help me." So, I sing. It's just a hum at first, the melody Elder Lyra used to sing. Soft, tentative. Nothing happens. No one drops dead. No windows shatter. Just a simple, pretty tune. But Tyrion's eyes flutter closed. His hand tightens on mine. And for the first time since I've known him, his expression softens into something like peace. I keep singing, the melody growing stronger, and I see it. A faint shimmer in the air around him, like heat waves, like something breaking. His lips part and he makes a sound, barely audible, like a man who's been underwater finally breaking the surface. Then he gasps and pulls away, and the shimmer vanishes. His eyes fly open, wide with shock. He touches his throat, opens his mouth. Nothing comes out. But I saw it. We both saw it. "There's magic on you," I whisper, "blocking your voice," and my singing started to break it. He nods shakily, and when he writes his next note, his handwriting is almost illegible with urgency. "We need to find out who did this. And why? Because if someone powerful enough to curse an alpha has been hiding it for 7 years. They're still out there," I finish, "and they won't want us breaking the curse." That night, I dream of flames and a woman in white with a smile like poisoned honey. The library fire happens 2 weeks later. We're close, so close to the truth. I found a journal, hidden in a hollowed-out book, because of course it was, written by Tyrion's mother. The last entry is dated the night she died. I've discovered something terrible. The High Priestess, Morvana, she's not what she claims. She's been systematically eliminating the Starlight bloodlines, afraid of their power. She killed the last singer, and now she's hunting the descendants. I've warned Kate. That's where the entry ends. No conclusion. No explanation of what she was going to do with this information. But it's enough. I'm reading it for the third time, trying to memorize every word, when I smell smoke. It comes fast. Impossibly fast. One moment the library is peaceful. The next, flames are climbing the eastern wall, consuming books and tapestries, an ancient wood with terrifying hunger. Tyrion! I scream because he's deeper in the library, researching something in the old maps section. He appears through the smoke, his shirt already over his mouth and nose. He sees the journal in my hands and his eyes go wide. He points urgently toward the exit. But I'm frozen, watching the flames spread, consuming centuries of knowledge, and I understand with sickening clarity. This isn't an accident. Someone knows we're getting close. Tyrion grabs my arm, dragging me toward the door. We're almost there when a beam collapses, blocking our path. The heat is intense, the smoke choking. I can hear shouts from outside, warriors coming to fight the fire, but they won't get here in time. I look at Tyrion, and he looks at me, and we both know we're going to die here. Unless... I need to sing. I gasp through the smoke. He shakes his head violently. Too dangerous. We don't know what will happen. We're dead anyway. He hesitates, then nods. He pulls me close, his arms around me, shielding me with his body. His forehead presses against mine, and his eyes... God... His eyes are so full of trust, it breaks my heart. I sing. Not the gentle melody from before, but something else. Something deeper. Older. That rises from a place inside me I didn't know existed. It's not words, exactly. But not quite a wordless tune, either. It's something in between. Something that tastes like starlight and feels like the first breath of spring. The flames respond. They don't go out. That's not what the song does. Instead, they pull back, creating a path, like they're bowing to something greater than their own hunger. The smoke clears just enough to breathe. The beam that fell lifts slightly, just enough for us to squeeze under. Tyrion's grip on me tightens. Against my ear, I hear it, the smallest, roughest whisper. Iris! My name. He said my name. Then the moment passes, the song ends, and we're running. We burst through the door into the arms of the warriors who finally arrived, and we collapse on the stone floor of the hallway, coughing and gasping. I've still got the journal clutched in my hand, pages singed but readable. Captain Rylan is shouting orders, organizing the effort to save what can be saved. Tyrion is being examined by the fortress healer. I'm sitting against the wall, shaking, when I feel it. Someone watching. I look up, and at the end of the hallway, partially hidden in shadow, I see her. A woman in white. High Priestess Morvana. She's beautiful in the way winter is beautiful. Cold. Sharp. Deadly. Her dark hair is braided with silver. Her eyes ancient despite her youthful face. And when she sees me looking, when she sees the journal in my hands, she smiles. Then she turns and walks away. She knows, I tell Tyrion later, when we're alone in his chambers. The first time I've ever been here. The room is sparse, functional, with maps on the walls, and weapons on every surface. But there's also a shelf of books, and I recognize some of the titles from the library. He's been researching too, on his own time. Morvana knows we're onto her. Tyrion nods. He's writing faster now, more urgently. She's been planning this for years. My mother was going to expose her. so she killed my parents and cursed me to ensure I couldn't speak the truth. But why? What's her endgame? Power. Control. The Moon Council governs all the packs. If she eliminates anyone who could challenge her, the Starlight Bloodlines, Alphas who question her, she'll have absolute authority. The Suncrest Pack, I breathe. Their challenge to your leadership. She's behind it, isn't she? She's manipulating them, making them think you're weak, so they'll overthrow me, he finishes in writing, and she'll support their claim, ensuring whoever becomes the new Nightfang Alpha owes her their position. We have to tell someone. The Moon Council, the other Alphas. He's already shaking his head. Who will believe us? I can't speak to defend myself. You're a slave, with a voice that kills. And our only evidence is a journal that's half-burned, and a curse we can barely prove exists. He's right. God, he's right. So what do we do? He looks at me for a long moment, then writes something that changes everything. We break the curse. Fully. If I can speak again, if I can tell everyone what happened, she loses her power over me. My singing helped, but it wasn't enough. Because you're untrained. You have the gift, but you don't know how to use it properly. He hesitates, then adds, we need to find out what happened to the other Starlight descendants. If any are still alive, they could teach you. And if they're all dead, then you learn on your own, through trial and error, using you as the test subject. It's not a question. Yes, that could kill you. We don't know what breaking a curse of this magnitude will do. He reaches out, cups my face with one hand. His palm is warm, his touch gentle. When he mouths the words this time, I can almost hear them. I trust you. Three words. Simple. Devastating. I lean into his touch, and for a moment, just a moment, I let myself pretend this is something other than what it is. That he's not my alpha, and I'm not his debt. That we're just two people who found each other in the darkness and decided not to let go. Then someone knocks on the door, and the moment shatters. It's Captain Rylan, and he looks grim. Alpha, we have a problem. The problem is that the Moon Council has called an emergency session. In 3 days, all the Alphas and High Priestess Morvana will convene at the Neutral Grounds to formally address concerns regarding Nightfang Pack leadership. It's a trial. Not officially, but everyone knows that's what it is. And Tyrion still can't speak. The fortress becomes a hive of tense preparation. Advisors argue about strategy. Warriors train harder, anticipating the worst. Rylan tries to convince Tyrion to at least bring written statements, to have a spokesperson, to do something other than rely on silent intimidation. But I see the truth in Tyrion's eyes. He knows this is Morvana's endgame. She's been building to this moment, discrediting him, isolating him, ensuring that when the council meets, he'll have no voice to defend himself and no allies willing to stand beside him, unless we break the curse first. We spend every moment we can in what's left of the library, searching through the salvaged books. I'm learning about the Starlight Singers, about how their magic worked. It wasn't just random power. It was intentional, trained, precise. They could heal with one melody, harm with another, bind with a third. And the most powerful of them could break curses woven by even the strongest witches. But I don't know how, I say in frustration, throwing down yet another book that's too damaged to read. These books are all theory, nothing practical. It's like learning to swim by reading about water. Tyrion looks up from his own research, considers, then writes, so stop reading. Start practicing. On you, on me. That's insane. We're out of time, Iris. His handwriting is sharp, urgent. The council meets in 2 days. If we don't break this curse before then, I lose everything. My pack, my lands, my... He stops, crosses something out, continues. Everything. I want to ask what he crossed out. I want to ask what I am to him, if I'm anything beyond a useful tool. But there's no time for that. Okay, I whisper. Okay, we try. That night, in his chambers with the door locked and guards posted outside, I begin. I start with the melody Elder Lyra taught me, the one that brought him peace before. But this time, I push deeper, letting my voice rise and fall with intention. I'm searching for the curse, for the magic wrapped around his throat and his memories. I can feel it, a dark, thorny thing woven through his very essence. It's not just blocking his voice. It's wrapped around his mind, his heart. Breaking it will hurt. But I keep singing. Tyrion's hands clench into fists. Sweat beads on his forehead. His eyes squeeze shut, and I can see the pain in every line of his body. But he doesn't ask me to stop. He doesn't pull away. He trusts me. So I sing until my throat is raw, until my voice cracks and fails. When I finally stop, gasping, Tyrion slumps forward. For a terrifying moment, I think I've killed him. Then he looks up, and his lips move. Iris. It's barely a whisper, rough and broken. But it's there. It's his voice. Tyrion? I throw my arms around him without thinking, and he catches me, holds me tight. Not enough, he manages, his voice failing. Still blocked. But closer. We'll keep trying, every night until... No. He pulls back, cups my face. Too dangerous. You're pushing too hard. You'll hurt yourself. I don't care. I do. Two words spoken in a voice like gravel and honey, and I'm undone. I don't know who moves first. Probably me. But suddenly we're kissing, and it's desperate and messy and perfect. His hands are in my hair. Mine are fisted in his shirt, and for a few perfect moments there's no curse, no conspiracy, no council. Just us. When we finally break apart, we're both breathing hard. Tyrion's eyes are bright, almost feverish. Iris, he whispers. I need to tell you. Later, I say, pressing my fingers to his lips. Tell me later, when you can say everything you want to say, when your voice is fully your own again. He nods, then kisses my forehead. It's tender, protective, and it makes my chest ache. We have one more day. I don't see Tyrion the next day. Rylan says he's in meetings, preparing for the council session. But when I pass by the Alpha's chambers late in the afternoon, WF continue, I hear raised voices. Well, one raised voice. Rylan's. You can't go in like this. At least let me speak for you, or bring the girl. A sharp bang. Like a fist on wood. Fine, fine, but this is suicide, and you know it. I slip away before Rylan emerges, my stomach churning. That night I wait in the library ruins, in our usual spot. Tyrion doesn't come. I wait until dawn, and he still doesn't come. I'm heading back to my chambers, exhausted and worried, when I'm intercepted by a servant I don't recognize. The Alpha requires your presence. She says, in the war room, immediately. My heart leaps, finally. But when I enter the war room, it's not just Tyrion waiting. High Priestess Morvana stands beside him, radiant in her white robes, her smile warm and welcoming. Tyrion looks like carved stone, his expression unreadable. Ah, Iris, Morvana says, her voice like silk. I've heard so much about you. The little Thornvale girl with the deadly voice. Every instinct I have screams danger. High Priestess, I manage. I wasn't aware you were visiting. Oh, it's not a social call. I'm here as a representative of the Moon Council, conducting a preliminary investigation before tomorrow's session. She circles me slowly, assessing. Tell me, dear, how have you been treated here? Has the Alpha been kind to you? It's a trap. Every word is a trap. I've been treated fairly. Fairly. How diplomatic. She glances at Tyrion, whose jaw is clenched tight. You know, there are rumors that the Alpha has been behaving strangely, that he's been seen entering forbidden sections of the fortress late at night. With you. We were researching pack history, for educational purposes. Educational, her smile sharpens. And the fire? That destroyed centuries of irreplaceable texts? Where were you when it started? In the library, with the Alpha. We barely escaped. How fortunate. She stops in front of me, and her eyes. Up close, I see they're not warm at all. They're cold. Ancient. Calculating. You know what I think, Iris? I think you're playing a very dangerous game. I think you've been filling the Alpha's head with wild theories about curses and conspiracies. My blood runs cold. I think, she continues, stepping closer, that you're taking advantage of a traumatized silent man who can't defend himself against your manipulations. That's not silence! Her voice cracks like a whip, and I feel it, a surge of magic, actual physical force that makes me stumble back. You are nothing. A cursed girl from a nothing pack. And if you continue to interfere with matters beyond your understanding, you will find yourself wishing you had died in that library fire. Tyrion moves then, stepping between us. His hand goes to his sword. Morvana laughs, delighted. Oh, how gallant. The silent Alpha defending his pet. Tell me, Tyrion. Oh, wait. You can't, can you? The cruelty in her voice is breathtaking. Tyrion's hand shakes on his sword hilt. I can see the war inside him. The desperate need to speak. To defend himself. To defend me. Trapped behind the curse she created. You should know, Morvana says, her voice dropping to something almost conversational, that tomorrow's council session is merely a formality. The decision has already been made. The Suncrest Pack will assume control of the Starfall Peaks. You'll be retired from your position. Alive, if you're wise enough not to resist. She turns to leave, then pauses at the door. And Iris? The council has also decided that dangerous individuals with uncontrolled magical voices cannot be allowed to roam free. You'll be entering council custody. For everyone's safety, of course. Then she's gone, leaving us in devastated silence. Tyrion turns to me, and the anguish in his eyes nearly breaks me. We have to run, I whisper. Tonight. We'll go somewhere she can't find us. He's shaking his head, reaching for paper and pen with trembling hands. I can't abandon my pack. They need me. They need you alive. And I need you. He writes it so hard, the pen nearly tears through the paper. But I can't let her take you. I won't. Then what do we do? He stares at the paper for a long moment, then writes two words. Break it. Tyrion, we tried. We need more time. We're out of time. He grabs my shoulders, his eyes boring into mine. One more night. One more attempt. If you can break it fully, if I can speak at the council tomorrow, we have a chance. And if I can't? He doesn't answer. He doesn't have to. We both know what happens if he goes to that council meeting still unable to defend himself. Morvana wins. Tonight, I say. We try tonight. And whatever happens. He kisses me. It's soft, almost reverent, and it tastes like goodbye. Whatever happens, he whispers against my lips, his voice barely there. You are the best thing I never knew. I needed. I'm crying. When did I start crying? We're going to survive this, I tell him fiercely. Both of us. We're going to break this curse, and you're going to stand before that council and tell them everything. And we're going to win. He nods, but I can see he doesn't quite believe it. Neither do I, if I'm honest. But we have to try. Midnight finds us back in his chambers, the door locked, the world shut out. Tyrion sits in a chair in the center of the room, his hands gripping the armrests. He's prepared for pain, for failure, possibly for death. I stand before him, my hands shaking. My voice already warming up with quiet humming. I don't know what I'm doing, I admit. He reaches out, takes one of my hands, brings it to his heart. I feel it racing under my palm. Together, he mouths, together. I close my eyes and begin to sing. This time, I don't hold back. I pour everything into the melody. Every ounce of fear, hope, anger, love. I think of Elder Lyra's kindness, of the loneliness that's defined my life, of the first moment I saw Tyrion's silver eyes and felt something shift in the universe. I think of his notes in the library, his rare smiles, the way he kissed me like I was something precious. I think of the future we won't have if this doesn't work. The magic responds. I can see it now. The curse, black and thorny and vicious, wrapped around his throat, his heart, his memories. It fights me, resists, digs deeper. Tyrion gasps, his body going rigid. Blood trickles from his nose. I should stop. This is killing him. But I don't stop. I change the melody, following some instinct I didn't know I had. Not trying to rip the curse away, but to untangle it. To loosen each thread, each thorn, with careful, intentional notes. It's working. I can feel it giving way. But then I feel something else. The curse isn't just magic. It's connected to something. Someone. And that someone is aware of what I'm doing. Morvana, a surge of hostile magic slams into me, trying to stop the song. I stumble, gasping, but force myself to keep going. I'm locked in a battle now, my voice against her will, both of us fighting over Tyrion's soul. He's screaming. I can hear it now, his voice finally breaking through in wordless agony. I'm sorry, I sob, still singing. I'm so sorry. I'm almost there. Just hold on. One more thread. One more thorn. I reach for the highest note I've ever attempted. Something that feels like it might shatter my throat. And the curse breaks. The backlash throws me across the room. I hit the wall hard, stars exploding across my vision. When I can finally focus, I see Tyrion collapsed in the chair, gasping, his whole body shaking. Tyrion! I crawl to him, terrified I've killed him. Then he opens his eyes. Iris, he says, and his voice is clear, strong, beautiful. Iris, I can... He stops, touches his throat in wonder. I can speak. Oh, thank God. I'm laughing and crying at the same time. Say something else. I love you. The words hang in the air between us, impossible and perfect. I've loved you since the moment you walked into my war room and looked at me like I was a person instead of a monster, he continues, the words spilling out like he's been holding them back for 7 years. I've loved you through every silent night in the library, every note we passed, every moment you trusted me when you had no reason to. I love you, Iris, and I'm sorry it took me so long to say it. I kiss him. What else can I do? When we finally break apart, he's smiling, actually smiling. And it transforms his entire face. We did it, I whisper. You did it, you incredible, impossible woman. He stands, pulling me up with him, his arms around my waist. Tomorrow I'll tell the council everything. With you by my side. With me by your side, I agree. We have one night. One night to be happy. To be in love. To pretend the world isn't going to try to destroy us in the morning. We make it count. Dawn comes too soon. The council grounds are neutral territory, a circle of ancient stones in a valley between the packlands. All the major alphas are here, Suncrest, Riverfang, Nightfang, and three others I don't recognize. High Priestess Morvana sits at the head of the circle, radiant and confident. She hasn't realized yet that she's lost. Tyrion stands in the center of the circle, and I'm at the edge with Rylan and the other Nightfang witnesses. The Suncrest Alpha, Marcus, is already speaking, listing grievances and concerns about Tyrion's fitness to lead. Morvana watches with a small smile, waiting for the moment she can call for a vote. Then Tyrion speaks. Enough. One word, but it echoes across the valley like thunder. Everyone freezes. Marcus stops mid-sentence, his jaw dropping. The other alphas lean forward, shock evident on their faces. Morvana goes very, very still. I have been silent for 7 years, Tyrion continues, his voice strong and clear, because High Priestess Morvana cursed me. She murdered my parents, stole my voice, and tried to erase my memories to prevent me from exposing her crimes. Chaos erupts. Alpha's shouting questions, demanding proof. Morvana is on her feet, her face a mask of outraged innocence. This is absurd. The Alpha is clearly disturbed. My mother discovered that you've been systematically hunting and murdering the descendants of the Starlight Singers, Tyrion says, pulling out the journal, the evidence we nearly died to protect. She documented your crimes, and when she tried to expose you, you killed her. He tosses the journal to the nearest Alpha, who catches it with wide eyes. The fire that night wasn't an accident. The curse on me wasn't grief. It was attempted murder. And you've spent 7 years manipulating the Council, sowing discord between packs, consolidating power, all to ensure no one could challenge you. Morvana's mask cracks. Just for a moment, I see the truth beneath. The cold calculation. The ancient hunger for power. You have no proof, she says, but her voice wavers. The journal could be forged. Your curse could be your own delusion. The curse was broken last night, Tyrion says, by a Starlight Singer descendant. One of the bloodline you thought you'd eliminated. He looks at me, extends his hand. Iris. I step forward, my heart in my throat. Show them, he says softly. I understand what he's asking. It's a risk. If I lose control, if my voice harms instead of heals, I'll prove Morvana right about the danger I pose. But I trust him, and he trusts me. So I sing. Not the complex, powerful magic I use to break the curse. Just a simple healing melody, the kind the singers used for minor wounds and ailments. I direct it at the nearest Alpha, who has a visible scar on his arm. The scar fades as I sing, the old wound healing before everyone's eyes. Gasps ripple through the council. The Starlight Singers weren't a threat, I say when the song ends. They were healers, peacemakers. But Morvana feared their power, feared they could expose her, so she hunted them, killed them. And she would have killed me too, if Alpha Tyrion hadn't protected me. Morvana's composure finally shatters. Magic flares around her, raw, dark, vicious. You stupid interfering child, she snarls. Do you have any idea how long I've worked for this? How many obstacles I've eliminated? I am the Moon Council. I am under arrest, the Riverfang Alpha interrupts, standing. For murder, conspiracy, and abuse of power. The other Alphas rise in agreement. Morvana looks around the circle, seeing her defeat, and her face twists with rage. You think you've won? You think this changes anything? I am eternal. I will... Tyrion moves faster than I've ever seen him move. One moment he's beside me, the next his hand is on Morvana's throat, and his voice is cold as winter. You took 7 years of my life. You made me a monster in the eyes of my own pack. You tried to take the woman I love. He leans closer, his voice dropping to a whisper everyone can still somehow hear. I promise you, whatever punishment the Council decrees will be mercy compared to what I would do to you, if they let me. Then he releases her and steps back, leaving her gasping. The Council takes her into custody. The journal is examined and authenticated. My heritage is verified through magical testing. And when it's all over, when the sun is setting on the longest day of my life, Tyrion finds me sitting on the edge of the stone circle, staring at the mountains. It's over, he says, sitting beside me. Is it? I look at him. She'll be punished, sure. But the damage she did, the packs she turned against each other, the singers she killed, can be healed, over time, with work, and with people like you leading the way. People like me? He takes my hand. The Moon Council has asked you to become their official healer, to train other potential singers, if any remain, to help rebuild what Morvana destroyed. My breath catches. That's overwhelming? I know, you don't have to decide now. What if I'm not good enough? What if I fail? You won't, and even if you stumble, you'll have help. He squeezes my hand. You'll have me. If you want me. If I want you? I laugh, shaking my head. Tyrion, you're an alpha. I'm nobody. You're the woman who saved my life, my voice, my soul. You're the last Starlight Singer. You're the bravest person I've ever met. He cups my face, his silver eyes soft. And you're the woman I love. So yes, if you want me, you have me. Forever. I kiss him as the sun sets, painting the mountains gold and pink and purple. Forever sounds perfect. 6 months later, I'm standing in the rebuilt library, bigger, better, with an entire new wing dedicated to Starlight Singer history and training. I found three other descendants, young women who'd been told their voices were curses, just like I had been. I'm teaching them. Slowly, carefully, we're rebuilding what was lost. Tyrion is beside me, reading from a new journal. This one documenting our discoveries, our progress. He reads aloud sometimes now, just because he can. Just because his voice is his own again. The third training session was more successful, he reads. Mira managed to heal a broken bone. Kessa is still struggling with control, but showing improvement. And Lara, he smiles. Lara nearly brought down a ceiling with her enthusiasm. She's powerful, I say. She just needs to learn precision. Like her teacher? I elbow him. I have plenty of precision, thank you. You do. He sets down the journal and pulls me close. You're extraordinary. All of you are. Through the window, I can see the Starfall peaks glowing in the afternoon light. The fortress below is bustling with activity. Nightfang warriors training alongside Riverfang, and even Suncrest pack members. The Silent War is truly over, and something new is beginning. Something better. I never thought I'd have this, I murmur. A home. A purpose. You. Neither did I. Tyrion kisses the top of my head, but I'm grateful for every moment, even the painful ones. Because they led me here. Led us here, I correct. Us, he agrees. Later that night, we stand on the balcony of his, our, chambers, and watch the stars wheel overhead. The same stars that gave our story its name. The same stars that watched us find each other in the darkness. Do you ever wonder what happens next? I ask. Every day, he admits. But I'm not afraid anymore. Whatever comes, we'll face it together. Together, I echo. And as he kisses me under the shattered stars, stars that broke apart to bring us together, I finally understand what Elder Lyra meant all those years ago. My voice was never a curse. It was always a song. I just needed to find the right person to sing it with. The End.